Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in, shaping up, then checking out on the prison bus. This is it, the apocalypse. Whoa, I'm waking up.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Red Pill Reports. My name is JD. We are live, just like we are every day, Monday through Friday. It is straight up 10 o'clock Central Time right now, and I'm really, really happy that all of you guys chose to join us today. Really appreciate all the people who are checking out the show, people who are sharing it with their friends. The listenership is growing by leaps and bounds. It's absolutely amazing to be a part of. So I've got some news regarding our secret mystery guest today. It has now been unveiled to me who we will have on the show, so it's my pleasure to let you guys in on the loop. We are going to be joined by Mr. Mike Sparks in a little while today. He'll be joining us at the second hour of the program like we do every day. And Mike Sparks has written a book called James Bond is Real, and it's a really, really large book, lots of really interesting information in it. But essentially what he's is saying and what he is supporting with his research is that the author of all of the James Bond books, Ian Fleming, or all of the original James Bond books, was actually an MI5 agent himself. And actually, many of the stories that he allegedly espoused in those James Bond books were actually real-life events or based on real-life events out of the life of Ian Fleming himself. And so Mike has taken a lot of time to dig really, really into a lot of the writings of Ian Fleming and tried to pull out any type of warnings or insights that he could find, given the situation that Ian Fleming could very well have been an MI5 agent himself. So I had a long chat with Mike last night. Very, very interesting guy. I think you guys would really, really appreciate this conversation. It's going to be pretty in-depth. So look forward to that at the 11 o'clock hour, about an hour from now. And then tomorrow, again, very, very excited to be welcoming Commander Dale Brown back to the program. Of course, Commander Dale Brown is the gentleman who runs Detroit's Threat Management Center. He is the founder of that organization, and he runs a group of people up there who are technically security guards, armed security guards. But it's, man, I'm telling you, this is what we need in law enforcement. So with everything that's going on, there were some more incidents that happened in law enforcement over the weekend and also last night in New York. So we're still not out of the woods yet in terms of figuring out what we can do about this whole police brutality issue. And I think that Dale Brown, again, one of those gentlemen out there that just has the right idea, is completely on the right page, and I just love speaking with him. So I can't wait to talk to him tomorrow. Obviously, a lot of economic stuff happening right now as well. So we are going to have Kenneth Shorkin Jr. on the show on Thursday as well. He runs the Daily Economist website, also another fantastically insightful gentleman. So we will have the rest of the week's going to be a big week. Again, you know, it's going to be a big week, it's going to be a big month, and it's going to be a really big year here at Red Pill Report. So all of you guys who are tuning in and making this your daily dose of deprogramming, or at least setting the stage for your listening to Truth Frequency all day, man, cannot thank you guys enough. Also appreciate all the emails we've been getting too. It's just so wonderful to have such a group of people surrounding you that want to support you. And, you know, we're all here in this together, trying to create a forum so that everybody can get insightful pieces of information from really quality guests. So that's essentially what we try and do here at Red Pill Reports. And so I hope all of you out there are finding some value in what it is that we're doing every day. And I hope that you guys enjoyed our conversation yesterday. So again, lots and lots of news to cover during the first hour. We all I always like to try and go through as many of the articles as I can, bringing you guys headlines from around the world just to try and keep you guys up to date with what's going on, and then we try and get into some science and some tech and some health stuff. But there's always so many news articles I cannot get to because I do what I'm doing right now, which is essentially just rambling. But if you go to redpillreports.com, right there at the top, there's always the show section. It'll outline for you some of the important information about the guest, any kind of links that you might want to follow to find out more about them. And then as well, it also lists all of these headlines and articles that we feel like are either important for you to understand or are important for you to interpret from the angle of trying to figure out why it is these people are telling us what they're telling us. So if you're one of these people that believes that there is an agenda going on, sometimes it's helpful to pay attention to what they are spoon-feeding the masses because, you know, I don't really care what an individual thinks, but I definitely want to be aware when a group of people think something because that can be a dangerous situation. So anyway, let's move on and figure out what the talking heads are trying to get us to believe. Today, there's a pretty big report coming out of Egypt right now, and there was a lot of conjecture about this last night. It was kind of going back and forth on whether or not I believed that the Saudi king had passed away, and it does not appear at this point that he has passed away, but Egypt is right now reporting that the Saudi king, King Abdullah, has decided to abdicate his throne in the next coming days. So if that's true, we don't really know yet. Again, this is a report coming out of Egypt. We do know that he has been in the hospital since about the 31st of December battling pneumonia, but whether or not he is going to abdicate his throne at the end of the week, it's kind of difficult to say. As I said, there were reports that he had passed away actually last night, some of the alternative news outlets. But what's important to think about, we've talked about this before, is obviously there's going to be a succession. Somebody else is going to be taking over. And the successor in Saudi Arabia essentially has the ability to sculpt foreign policy in any way that they see fit, as well as still kind of manning the helms at OPEC, if we believe that OPEC is still operating effectively or is still some sort of actual, you know, organization. But obviously a succession of the king there in Saudi Arabia could have pretty drastic effects on the price of oil, and oil being a pretty key economic factor, to put it mildly, these days. So whether or not the king will give up his throne coming up here in the next couple of days remains to be seen, but it did come across the news wire this morning, and this is actually news from Egyptian media, but it's being reported in the Jerusalem Online, which is actually a pretty good news source. So I don't know, take it with a grain of salt. Obviously, that announcement will probably have some effect on oil, and we'll get to that when we get over into the economic news in a little while, but I will let you know that oil did find new lows yesterday. Again, we were talking about $49 oil yesterday being at the new 5-year low for oil, and it actually went lower than that this morning. So still the slide of oil, obviously a major concern in the economy. We'll have a couple of great guests on later in the week to talk about that a little bit more. Here's a story coming out of Mexico right now. Obviously, we have been following the situation with the 43 students that went missing. Well, now the wife and the former mayor of the Mexican city where those students went missing have both been charged officially with organized crime and money laundering. Prosecutors say that the mayor's wife, Maria de Los Angeles Pineda, her brothers were actually in the drug gang that operated in Iguala. So, of course, these people, and I'm using that term mildly, I guess, the mayor and his wife essentially were trying to limit protester involvement, and so they had these kids attacked by the police. Some of them were killed in that initial encounter, and then they turned the rest of the student teachers over to police. The police then turned them over to the drug gang that is affiliated apparently with the mayor's wife, and then the drug gang killed them and burnt their bodies. So starting to finally see a little bit of justice happening there. I hope they absolutely just gut the government there. I mean, I know that our government in America is compromised and pretty bad, but I can't even imagine how bad it must be in Mexico right now. And as a final note, the mayor there has also been charged organized crime, kidnapping, and murder. So, you know, they do have capital punishment there in Mexico. So starting to finally get to a little bit of closure in terms of those 43 missing students, obviously unbelievably tragic there. Major protests going on in Germany right now. There have been some protests that were relatively small. I'm going to try and clarify all of this for you guys because it confused me a little bit. But happening essentially in Berlin over the weekend, there was a square that went dark in Cologne Cathedral. That square was plunged into darkness after a historical landmark in Western Germany shut its lights down in a silent protest of weekly rallies in Dresden against perceived Islamization of Europe. So right now there are two different factions of protesters hitting the streets in Germany, all over Germany. The first faction is a group called the Pegida, P-E-G-I-D-A, and they are essentially calling themselves the Patriotic Europeans against the Islamization of the West. So these are people who are very anti-Islamist, and they are putting together, protests all over the country. But anti-Pegida protesters also came out because they believe the people who are not anti-Islamist or are essentially not into racial cleansing of any kind. There's been a lot of people who come into the street to protest against the Pegida group, and those protests have gotten very, very large. The Pegida group was able to bring about 10,000 people to Brandenburg Gate, which is in Cologne also. But the anti-Pegida group brought about 22,000 people with them. So interesting stuff going on in Germany right now. Obviously, we see a lot of fighting back against the Islamization of the world. Whether or not that's warranted is kind of difficult to say when you don't live there. I know people in France are having a lot of problems. We've seen a lot of arson in Sweden at the mosques there. So this is not an issue that's going to go away anytime soon. But you have to be cautious about groups like this Pegida group because although they have outlawed images like the swastika and things like that at their rallies, there are still people who kind of gravitate towards a group like that who may have a history of being, we'll say racist. And it's really startling, I'm sure, to the people in Germany now, because that's a slippery slope that they've been on before, which is why so many people are showing up in the streets to protest the Pegida protesters themselves. So anyway, interesting stuff going on in Germany right now with the anti-Islamization movement there. It's kind of a startling report out of Al-Qaeda from the Arabian Peninsula right now. According to Washington, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is warning Americans that they have been working long and hard on a new tool to attack the United States. And they talked about this new tool in the latest issue of the terrorist group Inspire electronic magazine. And in that magazine, an individual called the AQ Chef was quoted as saying that they developed, and talking again about the Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, that they developed back in 2009 a very, very secret-style weapon, but the brothers in the External Operations Committee did not give them the green light to use it until recently. And now hinting at Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula's dedication to building undetectable bombs, he said in the winter 2014 edition of Inspire, which was just released a couple of weeks ago, that they have now developed other bombs that are more effective. And the AQ Chef indicates that lessons learned from failures in past assassination attempts and plots to attack U.S. airplanes and buildings have fed the development of a new generation of what it calls undetectable bombs. There's actually a 20-page section in the magazine called The Hidden Bomb, and he goes to painstaking detail about how to construct such a device. And so this is kind of the Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula's new tactic, according to Washington, is that they are really seeking to inspire lone wolf-type operators, lone wolf jihadists, and hoping that they will go and now attack, targets in the Western world. And Pistoli, the gentleman who just left his position at the TSA to return to private life, he just left there last week, did say last month that what the TSA's greatest concern is that there are non-metallic improvised electronic explosive devices that can go through metal detectors. And that, of course, is precisely what the Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula has been bragging about since 2009. So I don't know if you follow the whole terrorist motif, if you really believe in that, then this might be potentially something to be concerned about. We do seem to have had a lot of, I don't want to say false reports, but reports that have not seemed to come to fruition over the last couple months. I'd draw your attention back to the Christmas Spectacular that was warned from Al-Qaeda, also talking about planes in the UK and across Europe being hijacked for the Christmas holiday, but nothing really happened in that respect. So again, you know, you take these things with a kind of a grain of salt, but apparently Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula now has non-metallic bombs that are very effective. So something to be aware of, I guess. And ISIS, new word out of ISIS. They, man, they are doing well, ladies and gentlemen. Let me tell you, they have reportedly prepared their first annual budget in which it projects a $250 million surplus. And it actually opened a bank. It opened an Islamic bank in Mosul just last week. The Islamic State, also known as ISIS or ISIL, has approved a 2015 budget of $2 billion with an expected surplus of $250 million. And this is, of course, according to a religious leader in Mosul. The ISIS group's first budget comes as part of a broad development program for its declared territory, according to a tribal leader in the city, Al-Jahid. According to this gentleman, the senior religious figure in Mosul, the budget reportedly includes monthly wages for the poor and disabled, orphans, widows, and families of individuals killed in the airstrikes carried out by Iraqi and U.S.-led coalition forces. Ansari also said that the budget contained up to $2 billion of expenditure covering all areas of the caliphate in Iraq, Syria, and wherever the heck else they are. The ISIS group plans to divert the expected surplus of $250 million to aid its war effort, according to this Iraqi tribal leader. And the announcement of an IS budget comes just days after it reportedly established an Islamic bank in Mosul, offering loans and the possibility of exchanging damaged banknotes. The ISIS group took control of Mosul almost 7 months ago, along with vast tracts of northern, western, and central Iraq. Do you think it's ironic that the scariest group in the world can somehow pass a balanced budget and we can't? I don't know. I'll digress away from that. I just had to point that out for just a second. News out of Turkey right now said Monday that an agreement to train and equip thousands of moderate Syrian opposition fighters would be concluded later in January after several months of talks with the United States. The program is a key pillar of Turkish policy on Syria, which aims to simultaneously pressure not only Islamic militants, but also the Damascus regime of President Bashar al-Assad. The program, due to begin in late March, is aimed at training 5,000 fighters each year with a total of 15,000 in the three-year period, according to officials from Washington. Turkey and the United States have been negotiating for months now how to respond to the crisis in Syria, and train and equip program is seen as a way to bring these two sides together onto common ground. Turkey's reluctance to take robust action against ISIS militants who have seized control of swaths of Iraq and Syria right up to the Turkish border has strained its ties with its other NATO allies, and Washington is pressing Ankara for the use of the Inkerklik air base in southern Turkey to facilitate U.S. jet strikes on ISIS militants. Turkey, however, has refused to succumb to the pressure and set several conditions for playing a greater role in the U.S.-led coalition against ISIS. I cannot imagine, even given the fact that Turkey is part of the NATO organization, Turkey can't move. I think that maybe the people in the United States just don't really understand that, but Turkey is actually a country, and they don't have any plans on picking up the borders and taking it someplace else. And Syria also, maybe people don't know this, another country also with borders, not planning on moving. And those two borders between Turkey and Syria, well, they touch. Yeah, they do. So why would Turkey want to put themselves in a position to support the United States in the overthrowing of Bashar by arming militants? Of course, there's no way we're going to get those weapons away from the moderate rebels, if we can even vet them as being moderate rebels, which is pretty ridiculous in my mind anyway. So we've got this potential where we're pushing Turkey to help us arm these moderate rebels, which are going to overthrow the government there, and then who knows, we're going to create a power vacuum, right? Who's going to fill it? Oh, I'm guessing the well-armed moderate rebels will probably fill that. So will they still then be friends with Turkey? I don't know, but if I was Turkey, I'd probably be somewhat concerned about that and maybe a little reluctant to just jump on the old U.S.-led coalition airstrike bandwagon. So I think that's what we're seeing. I think Turkey is probably playing this card pretty well. So anyway, moving on from that, that's what's going on in Turkey right meow. A NOAA employee, Federal Weather Service employee, charged with stealing sensitive infrastructure data from an Army Corps of Engineers database and meeting with a Chinese government official in Beijing, according to court documents that reveal this case as to be part of an FBI probe of Chinese economic espionage. This gentleman, Shen, who was an employee of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, it was at an office in Ohio. He was arrested in October and charged in a federal grand jury indictment with illegally accessing Army's National Inventory of Dams. The National Inventory of Dams is a very sensitive database containing information on all U.S. dams. U.S. intelligence officials have said that the database was compromised by Chinese hackers back in 2013 as part of covert efforts by Beijing to gather sensitive information on critical U.S. infrastructure for possible use in a future conflict. According to an FBI document in the case made public just the 30th of December, Ms. Chen and Zhao Yong, who is an official of the Ministry of Water Resources in Beijing, exchanged a series of emails in May of 2012 indicating that the two had met in Beijing earlier that year and that she was searching for and would provide dam-related information for him. Ms. Chen is now charged with stealing sensitive data involving critical national infrastructure after accessing, as we mentioned, the Army Corps of Engineers dam inventory in May of 2012 without authorization. She's also charged with lying to investigators about it. She is a 59-year-old naturalized American, and she has pled not guilty to all of these charges. But interesting that China would be very interested in our dams. Kind of scary stuff there if you think about that long and hard. Iceland has now withdrawn their EU application, and they are planning on lifting capital controls. This is coming despite public protests. The Iceland's prime minister plans to formally withdraw the country's EU application early in the new year here. He told an Icelandic radio station just on Sunday, and this is first steps also being taken place to remove capital controls, which have been in place since the financial crisis hit Iceland in 2008. He says are also going to be taken coming soon. Amazing. Iceland seems to be the only country that has pulled through this economic crisis. And what did they do? Well, they arrested all their bankers. They essentially wiped out all the debt of their population, and now they're out of the woods. And so they're going to start removing capital controls. Obviously, Iceland on the right path. Man, what you wouldn't give to see that template unfold here in this country. McDonald's has apparently stopped the selling of McNuggets at a chain in Japan because somebody found some vinyl in one of the nuggets. If you need another reason not to eat McDonald's, I don't even know. I was at the grocery store yesterday, and I used my card, so I saved a bunch of money. It was like $11, and I was like, ooh, I saved $11. She was like, yeah, now you can go to McDonald's, and total crickets. I had no idea what to even say to this person. I was just like, man, I cannot even imagine putting something from that place into my body under any circumstances. I would literally have to be starving to death, and then I probably still wouldn't do it. But a piece of vinyl found in one of the chicken nuggets in Japan. This happened in the northern part of Japan in the prefecture known as Aomori. The fast food giant, obviously, there has been selling these chicken nugget pieces that come from a Thai production facility. They've obviously stopped now because of the vinyl, and they have sent this the questionable chicken nugget to the headquarters in Tokyo. Anyway, I'm just throwing that out there because you should be eating McDonald's, essentially, because they put vinyl in their chicken sometimes. Who knows? Okay, let's see. What else do we want to talk about? I'm going to move on to some national news. There are a few other international stories right now. People are, RT is reporting that the over 3 million households in the UK fear missing their January mortgage or rent payments. Apparently, people spent a little more money than they wanted to on Christmas, but they are calling the situation in the UK right now a financial knife edge, with one out of nine people concerned right now that they're not going to make their mortgage or rent payments coming up in the first month of the new year. So definitely some concern going on there. Lots and lots of economic stuff happening around the world. It's just absolutely crazy. Let's move on to some national news right meow. Portland. I love this story. Portland, I got to tell you, you know, more people moved to Oregon than any place else last year. That's true. True story. I looked it up. Oregon. And I lived in Portland. Beautiful, beautiful place. But Portland, Oregon right now has apparently adopted a revolutionary new policy for dealing with mentally ill people. And we're talking about a policy that affects law enforcement officers. This is absolutely revolutionary. Listen to this. So the Portland Police Bureau adopted a new policy of de-escalation when dealing with encounters with people who deal who exhibit characteristics consistent with mental illness. This is coming from the Oregonian. According to the new policy, this is it, police are not expected to diagnose mental or emotional conditions, but are expected to recognize behaviors that are indicative of persons affected by mental illness or in crisis, with a special emphasis on those that suggest potential violence and or danger. If an officer judges that a person is sufficient or suffering from a mental illness or is in an acute state of crisis, instead of confronting them, they are strongly encouraged to disengage and reevaluate the situation with assistance of a supervisor or a member of the enhanced crisis intervention team. Non-engagement or disengagement are tactics that can be used if the member determines that conduct or continued contact with the person will result in an undue safety risk to the public, the person, or any of its members. A police report will be written documenting the following: the call, details, the reason for non-engagement or disengagement, actions taken to de-escalate the situation, actions taken to promote safety, follow-up plans and referrals made, and whether the address is flagged in a database containing the names of people who have been previously indicated as having mental episodes. And that database is going to be purged after 10 years if that individual has no further contact with the police. Absolutely astoundingly amazing bit of insight and common sense and logic coming out of a police department in Portland. My hat is off to these people. Anyway, 3-minute break, right, guys? We've got to come back in 3 minutes. We have a lot more national tech stuff, got some health stuff to talk about. Anyway, keep it right here, guys, wherever you are, making Truth Frequency Radio.
Chris and Sri Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking iodine now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MintUSA.org.
Evil contains within it the seed of its own destruction.
Truth Warrior with David Whitehead. Mondays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to Red Pill Reports. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We're moving into the second segment of our news segment, first hour of the show today. I wanted to just kind of follow up again on this Oregon story. I gotta say, this is so fantastic. I can't even imagine a police department as large as Portland's instilling in their officers this idea that you can de-escalate a situation if it looks like the situation needs to be de-escalated. Because we talked about this ad nauseum on this program. I've talked about it with Commander Brown. You know, some of the other incidents that happened around Ferguson. There was a shooting of a gentleman with a knife. Officers obviously handled that very, very poorly. The shooting of the 12-year-old with a fake gun in Ohio, obviously, again, handled very poorly. The shooting by the Albuquerque Police Department of the homeless gentleman, who was obviously, mentally a little bit unstable. This is fantastic news to me because all of those situations could have been addressed by taking this particular tack of we're going to de-escalate the situation if we're the only people here who are capable of doing that, which to me is exactly what we need to have happening in law enforcement. So, again, my hat goes off to the Portland Police Department for taking this initiative, and I hope that we see that unfolding across the country. I would imagine that what we'll see is that Portland will start having a lot of success with this new policy, and then I hope that that success will then inspire other police departments across the country to do the same thing. And we'll talk a little bit about that with Commander Dale Brown tomorrow. Right now, bad news coming out of New York. There is a massive manhunt currently underway for two suspects after they shot two NYPD officers responding to a robbery. This happened last night at about 10:30 on Tybout Avenue. Police say that a team of plainclothes officers had just finished their shifts in the 46th precinct when a call came in about a grocery store robbery. Police Commissioner Bill Bratton said that five officers as part of an anti-crime unit then spotted possible suspects in connection with the robbery. One of those suspects then went into a Chinese restaurant on the avenue near East 184th Street, while the other remained on the street. And as the officers approached the man on the street, police say that the other man inside the restaurant pulled out a gun and began shooting from the doorway. They approached the male outside when the male inside began firing at the officers, according to Chief Detective Robert Boyce. So the detective said the suspect then fled on foot. And both of the suspects fled on foot, carjacked a white Camaro about a block away, and that car was found abandoned at about 188th and Park. And they also found a revolver nearby. Now, the police were both struck twice. Neither of them were crucially or critically injured. Both of them were in the hospital. They're still looking for both of the suspects, although there was a gentleman who came into the hospital there in New York with a gunshot wound. So they are trying to figure out right now if that is related to this particular shooting. But again, this one wasn't, a targeting of the officers, but definitely not a good deal. And we don't like seeing, people getting shot in the streets of New York or anywhere else for that matter, which brings me to my next story, which happened in San Francisco. Police officers fatally shot a 32-year-old man Sunday after he pulled what turned out to be a replica gun while trespassing on restricted property in front of Mission Station. The shooting happened outside of the station at about 5 o'clock in the evening when an officer reported shots fired and a person down, and then requesting an ambulance. The San Francisco Police Chief Greg Suhr said the man had ventured into the parking lot of the police station, which is clearly marked as restricted to the public, though the gate is open so the police vehicles can always easily enter and exit. And it's not really uncommon for the public to enter that area, so three different police officers actually told this gentleman to leave as they were getting into their patrol officer, but the suspect didn't leave, so they found this a little bit unusual. They started to approach him and told him again that he couldn't be there. He went into his waistband where there was the butt of a gun and drew a weapon. Two sergeants fired and hit him three different times. The gun was later found to be an airsoft or BB gun, but this is one of these situations where obviously you got to be starting to think about suicide by cop in this situation, because if you're in, you know, a situation where you've got three other officers and they're telling you commands and you go ahead and reach for your waistband, that's not a great deal. It's probably not going to end well for you. And the reason I'm saying that there's potential for a suicide by cop situation here is because even though this guy has not been identified by the NYPD yet, I'm sorry, by the SFPD yet, they said that he had approached the officers earlier in the day and on 16th Street and asked them about what kinds of weapons they were carrying. So kind of an unusual incident there. It sounds a little bit to me like this gentleman might have been mentally unstable and looking for a suicide by cop kind of mentality, or a suicide by cop kind of end to it all, and accomplish that. So, of course, you know, you still have to wonder whether or not he really did have a BB gun or an airsoft gun or any kind of gun, because it's just difficult to trust official accounts of anything these days. So I will digress away from that. NYPD facing a major, major lawsuit right now. Brooklyn man planning on filing a $3 million lawsuit against the city of New York, alleging excessive force was used against him by a nightstick-wielding NYPD officer back in November. The officer Evans Mazel was caught on video hitting Donovan Lawson, who is 20 years old, in the head with a nightstick, drawing a fairly significant amount of blood. And the police encounter occurred on the 20th of November after Lawson allegedly attempted to skip a fare at the Myrtle Avenue and Broadway subway station in central Brooklyn. So he was essentially trying to piggyback through the turnstile because his girlfriend was using her student Metro card. And so the police came over and decided to beat him with a nightstick. So they are right now prosecutors are looking into seeing whether or not that case should be presented to a grand jury. Officer, of course, is under investigation right now for, excessive force and things like that. So NYPD going to be paying out some taxpayer money, I would imagine, on that one. I don't understand why we let these people just beat people anymore. It just does not make sense to me anyway. CIA announced just yesterday that its inspector general, who has investigated a dispute between the agency and Congress regarding the handling of records on the CIA's detention and interrogation activities, this gentleman is resigning effective the 31st of January. So David Buckley, who has served as the agency's internal watchdog for more than 4 years, is now leaving the agency to pursue an opportunity in the private sector. So he must have done a very good job covering things up for the CIA. So now he's got a wonderful new private sector job offer, I'm sure. He'll go off to make lots and lots of money, and we'll never hear from him again. I wish him the best of luck in all of that. Okay, a grand juror from Ferguson right now is going to be suing in order to get out from under her gag order. So a member of the grand jury, that this is the one that declined to invite former police officer Darren Wilson over the August 14th shooting of Michael Brown, is back in court right now, and this time trying to win the right to speak publicly about those grand jury proceedings. On Monday this week, attorneys for an individual named only as Grand Juror Doe filed a lawsuit alleging that St. Louis County Prosecutor Bob McCullough mischaracterized the case against Wilson, a former officer with the Ferguson Police Department, and presented evidence to the jury in a manner inconsistent with how such investigations are normally conducted. And we've had stories about this a couple of times. There's been quite a bit of digging into all of the information that was provided to the grand jury by McCullough and the prosecutor's offices there in St. Louis County. And it's unusual to me that we haven't seen a new grand jury already, given the fact that even McCullough himself said he allowed information to be told to the jurors that was not necessarily true. He allowed witnesses to testify that were not on the scene at all. And then we also have the story of the prosecuting team giving the grand jurors a completely inaccurate, unconstitutional state statute from Missouri that has not been a statute in Missouri since like 1985 when it was struck down by the United States Supreme Court. And that statute said, essentially told the grand jury that there an officer had every right to shoot a suspect because the law says that if a suspect is running away, then you can do anything in your power to make sure that you're able to arrest that person. And then so that was what was indicated to the grand jury as being the law of the land. And then 6 weeks later, almost at the end of the grand jury itself, prosecutors came out and said that wasn't entirely true, but it's really nothing to be concerned about. So again, there's so much regarding this grand jury non-indictment of Darren Wilson that makes me feel like we should probably see another case brought forward here. But anyway, one of the grand jurors now suing so that she can discuss the case. She wants to speak in the name of transparency about what happened when McCullough presented the jury with thousands of pages worth of evidence as they weighed Wilson's fate. And in the plaintiff's view, this is one of the things she is saying, the current information available about the grand jurors' views was not entirely accurate, especially the implication that all grand jurors believe that there's no support for any charges. Moreover, the public characterization of the grand jurors' view of the witness and evidence does not accord with the plaintiff's own. According to the lawsuit, the plaintiff also wishes to express opinions about whether the release of records has truly provided transparency. The plaintiff's impression that evidence was presented differently than in other cases, with the insinuation that Brown, not Wilson, was the wrongdoer, and questions about whether the grand jury was clearly counseled on the law. And again, a lot of indications that the jury was not clearly counseled on the law. So very, very interesting stuff there. Boehner looking like he might be on that slippery slope to losing his position as speaker there. There are more and more people stepping up right now, calling to oust Mr. Boehner, and I believe that vote is scheduled to happen today. Right now, Louis Gohmert, the Republican from Texas, seems to be the front runner for a replacement, and a lot of people, about 60% of Republican voters, want a new Speaker of the House right now, so we will see how Boehner's day ends up. Let's see here. I'm going to move on into some economic news because, as we mentioned earlier, lots and lots of things happening right now. Dow is down quite a bit this morning, down already 127 points, almost a full percent. Let's see what oil is. Holy cow, oil, $48.37, down almost 3.5% just today. That is significant, significant lows. That's the new five-year low for sure for oil at $48.37. Just crazy town. And gold popping up, obviously, people snapping up a little bit of gold right now. $1,208 for an ounce of gold and $1,629 for an ounce of silver. There's an interesting article coming out of Zero Hedge today asking whether or not Citibank is the new AIG and talking about also the comparison between J.P. Morgan's outstanding total derivatives and Citibank's outstanding total derivatives. Citibank has been in the news quite a bit lately, especially under kind of under attack by J.P. Morgan, suggesting that Citibank should break itself up. But Citibank right now seems to have surpassed J.P. Morgan in total derivatives. Citibank right now sitting on in excess of $70 trillion. Wow, $70 trillion in derivatives right now. Probably not a big deal, though. Who needs money, right? Let's see. U.S. energy stocks dropped sharply on Monday as the West Texas Intermediate fell below $50 a barrel for the first time since 2009, and Brent crude also tumbled to $53 yesterday on the New York Mercantile Exchange. This is another indicator that things are going kind of poorly right now because futures in February fell by nearly 5%. Briefly falling to $49.95 a barrel in New York just yesterday morning. That's the lowest it's been in more than 5.5 years. And again, just looking at what's going on right now, oil's still on the decline. So we'll probably see, again, there's going to be a lot of ramifications from this. I don't think a lot of people really are picking up on that yet. But, you know, of the 1.1 million jobs that were created since 2008, 1.5 million of them have been from the energy sector. I don't know if your math is as bad as mine is, but what that statement says to me is that if we did not have the energy segment of our economy, that we would still be at a net loss of nearly 500,000 jobs since 2008. And obviously, oil being below $50 a barrel is going to make the shale industry in this country very, 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 very tight. And of course, T. Boone Pickens, one of the guys out there that we like to follow because he does seem to pay attention to what's going on, he said that watching the U.S. rig count is the key to comprehending the looming oil crisis. So let's look at those numbers really quickly. In the last 4 weeks alone, we've seen a drop of over 100 rigs, and this is actually the second fastest slide since 2001 in percentage terms. So this is the worst December to January since 2008-2009, and as T. Boone Pickens notes, demand is down, lower demand being the main driver of the fall of oil, and the rig count is going to fall. He predicts a drop of about 500 rigs in the next 6 to 9 months. So again, we're seeing the slide of oil starting to bleed its way out into a whole bunch of other arenas at this point. And again, Jeff Gundlach, he's a gentleman who is on Double Line, which is a FUW production, another very smart economically guy. He essentially also saying the same thing. Oil is incredibly important right now. If oil falls to $40 a barrel, he says he thinks that the yield on 10-year treasury notes is going to probably go to 1%. He says he hopes it doesn't go to $40 because something then will be very, 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 very wrong with the world, not just the economy. The geopolitical consequences, to put it bluntly, could be terrifying. And I'm not sitting here trying to tell you guys all these horrible doom and gloom type stuff, but this is what's going on around us right now. I mean, there's not a way to deny the fact that oil has, you know, dropped to 5-year lows all of a sudden. That's not a deniable thing, and those things have ramifications. And if you're not paying attention to them, it can be difficult to prepare for some kind of plan of action should things continue to go in a bad direction. So that's why we're bringing all this to your table. Let's see here. USA Watchdog has got another report this morning, and we're talking to Rob Kirby in this particular one. He's saying Rob Kirby is a gold and derivatives expert, just for those of you guys who might not be aware of him, but he also believes that the crashing oil prices could potentially lead to a 2008-style financial meltdown. This is not a maybe. A market explosion is going to happen in 2015. Kirby contends, oh yes, without a doubt, it will. It must, because the income crude oil sales generate are used to pay the interest on the debt. And if you have a mortgage payment of $5,000 at the end of the month and you only have $2,500, you have defaulted. And that's essentially the position that these oil producers are in right now. We just need to wait for some coupon dates to come and go, because then it'll be pretty apparent that these guys don't have any money and they're not actually making any income. Kirby also thinks that what is happening with oil prices being cut in half in a matter of months is not an accident. He goes on to explain, he says, I look at what is transpiring in the crude oil market as yet another engineered or financial trickery on the part of the financial elites. What this breakdown in the crude oil price is going to spawn is potentially another financial crisis. It will be tied to the junk debt that has already been issued to finance the sale, the shale oil plays in North America. It is reported to be in the area of $500 billion worth of junk debt that is held largely on the books of large financial institutions in the Western world. And when these bonds start to fall, they will jeopardize the future of these financial institutions. He also says, I do believe that we will see the signal for the Fed to come riding into the rescue with quantitative easing number 4. And I also think quantitative easing number 4 is likely going to be accompanied by bank bail-ins, because we all know that Western world countries have adopted bail-in legislation in their most recent budgets, and the financial elites are engineering the excuse for their next round of money printing, and they will be confiscating money out of savings accounts and pension accounts. That's what he's saying. That's what Kirby's saying over at USA Watchdog, and I think he's probably right. I mean, he's not saying anything that's conjecture here. We know that they have now codified in legislation the ability to bail in banks from your pension funds. We know that's happening all over the world. Not just here in America, but all over the world. And obviously, there's been a lot of other people saying that this fall in oil prices is essentially allowing these people, the financial elites, to have something to hang their hats on later when they say, well, see, this is what caused the crash that's coming. They're going to be able to say, well, it was the crash of oil and not the $100 trillion or the $1 trillion of student loan outstanding debt or the subprime car loan crisis that nobody seems to want to talk about right now. Big deal. It's just going to be just like the housing crisis. But anyway, Kirby not really thinking things are going to be so good. Barclays, though, on the other hand, saying that despite continued physical demand in Asia, gold prices are expected to drop in 2015. So this is kind of the opposite side of that coin. And again, if you're looking to get into gold, I'd highly recommend Karatbars. We're affiliated with them, and I bought another 5 grams this last week and just absolutely love that organization. So you can check out the link at redpillreports.com if you're interested in getting gold. I would be doing it right now while gold prices are kind of flat and while the dollar is still strong. But in a report published Monday, Suki Cooper, who is the director of precious metals research at Barclays, said the outlook for the yellow metal has become more divided, but she still sees more downside risk this year as the U.S. dollar remains strong and oil prices remain weak. So again, pay attention to oil prices right now and with this situation unfolding in Saudi Arabia with the king, because if the Saudi king does either pass away or abdicate his throne and the successor comes in and decides to cut OPEC, we'll see immediately a major blow up in the price of oil, which could obviously play into the price of gold as well. So there's a lot of factors that play into the economic situation that's going on right now. The euro also fell to its weakest level in 2006 on the back of uncertainty over Greece's position within the single currency. Obviously, Greece getting ready to hold snap elections on the 25th of January, and a lot of infighting going on. People want to cut austerity, and the government that is in power right now would like to remain in power because they are tied heavily with and into the IMF and things like that. So we shall see what happens in Greece and how that affects the economy overall. I was going to tell you a really cool story about SpaceX this morning. SpaceX had planned on launching a rocket this morning. This was going to be a pretty big deal. The launch itself being fairly unremarkable, but SpaceX was planning on trying to land this re-entry rocket on a floating platform out in the ocean. Very, very cool stuff. It's the first time ever in the history of the world that we've actually tried to recover a rocket on a platform like that. Unfortunately, they had some issues this morning. The launch was supposed to happen this morning, and I would have had more insight about all of this for you, but that launch apparently had to be scrubbed because they were having a misbehaving actuator that was triggering an automatic abort. So next available opportunity for this launch is on Friday. So hopefully they will have this pesky actuator issue all resolved by then, because I'd like to see them attempt to do this. Essentially, this is a reusable rocket. They right now, they already have a contract to fly things up to the International Space Station. They've been doing that quite a bit. But in this particular launch, they plan on trying to recover not only the initial rocket, but one of the boosters as well. So it's kind of the first time anybody's ever tried to do this. And Elon Musk, the owner of SpaceX, actually gave them about a 50-50 chance earlier this morning before the launch. And of course, it didn't pan out. So there you go with that. Hedge funds right now being completely manned by robots are apparently crushing, and I mean crushing, the human rivals on Wall Street right now. This is the lesson that has been taken from a 2014 report in which it has been reported that computer algorithm-led investing produced absolutely stellar returns, beating most gut-driven human managers and dramatically recovering most of their losses from 2011, 12, and 13. These so-called managed future funds, which trade the futures contracts of stocks, bonds, currencies, and commodities, gained an average of 15.2% last year, and that's nothing. That's just one of them, okay? That beat virtually every other hedge fund strategy, including stock pickers, beat up bond vultures, and macroeconomic prognosticators. These average hedge fund gained in the low to mid single digits for 2014. So we're talking about more than twice the success rate in terms of allowing these robots to do all this investing for them. But look, at, I mean, some of the returns, the ISAM Systematic Class A, which is a mutual fund also being managed by robots, 62.39% return this year. 62% return. Ah, oh, that is absolutely crazy. Another group showed 39% return, another one 33%. Just goes to show you that these people absolutely have got the the casino that is Wall Street wired. I mean, we talk about front running and we talk about electronic trading and super high speed trades and things like that, but you know, the organizations that can afford now to invest in that technology are essentially running on autopilot, and they're running on autopilot to the tune of 62% returns. I mean, it sounds like the best job in the world if you can get it. I don't know. But hedge funds running by robots at this point. Another interesting robot story coming out of VB today is that researchers have now come up with a new way to teach robots how to use tools. And the way they're doing it is kind of ingenious. They're having them watch YouTube videos, much the same way you and I learn how to cook and do things like that. Researchers from the University of Maryland and the Australian Research Center in ICTA have just published a paper on their achievements, which they will present this month at the 29th annual conference of the Association for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence. The researchers employed convolutional neural networks, which are now at use at Facebook, warning, warning, danger, red flag, among other companies to identify the way a hand is grasping an item and to recognize specific objects. So the system also predicts the action involved with the object and the hand. So they're able to now train a machine by letting it watch people pick things up on video. And that is pretty scary, if you ask me, because that's pretty much, the, you know, now if we're going to really give robots the ability to teach themselves, has anybody seen Terminator, or is it just me that's seen that movie and realizes that self-aware, self-assembling robots, not really necessarily a good thing. An Audi car has driven itself from San Francisco to Las Vegas. It is part of the two world premieres at this week's 2015 Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. The car drove a total distance of 550 miles with a number of engineers and journalists all getting time behind the wheel. The car is called the A7th. And it is a concept able to drive itself between speeds of 0 and 70 miles an hour, including making lane changes and passing maneuvers. Very, very cool stuff. So Audi at the forefront of our self-driving automobiles. That's pretty much all the time I have for news today. There was some health stuff I wasn't able to get to. Bottom line, you need curcumin. Get curcumin, eat more curcumin. That's really the big story today. Again, we're going to be speaking with Mike Sparks in just about 3 minutes, so keep it right here, you guys. We'll be right back. 3 minute break. Keep it right here.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken, but it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai Kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA. Worldwide.
You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to Red Pill Reports, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that three-minute break. We're moving into the second hour of our broadcast like we do every single day, and we are very excited to be bringing you a very special guest today. The gentleman's name that we are going to speak with is Mr. Mike Sparks. Now, Mike Sparks has written a book called James Bond is Real, and it's the untold story of political military threats that Ian Fleming warned us about. So, of course, we're talking about the author of, I believe, 14 different James Bond books. And Mike Sparks has written a very interesting book here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, it is thick. It is chock full of all kinds of fascinating details. But essentially, his theory is that Ian Fleming was, in fact, an actual agent, and that a lot of the stories that he relays in the James Bond stories are based on real-life events that he took part in. And as such, he, Ian Fleming, was able to offer some fairly unique insights as to what was actually going on in the world of clandestine operations back in the day. So Mike Sparks is a former infantry NCO and first lieutenant officer. He's also the director of the First Tactical Studies Group Airborne, which is a non-profit think tank and action group for military excellence. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in history education, and as I mentioned before, is the author of a wonderful book called James Bond is Real. And it's my very distinct pleasure to welcome Mr. Mike Sparks to the program today. Mike, thank you very much for joining us today.
Glad to be here and to be part of the increasing awareness of Ian Fleming's reality as being James Bond. It seems like every week another layer of the truth is being uncovered, and we're actually right now on the cutting edge of that. I'm talking about myself having to stay on top of this uncovering. Last year there was a mini-series by the BBC America where they're finally showing Ian Fleming as an operative. And just like a few days ago, I learned of an operation in World War II called Postmaster, where Ian Fleming conjured this up, where special operations executive agents stole three enemy ships from Africa and brought them back to, the Allied side. And I also, myself, during my research, stumble on new things that Ian Fleming had did during the war. One of them is that he took motor torpedo boats and motor gun boats, which are, like patrol boats, PT-109, same kind of craft, actually, fast patrol boats, and took the guns off them and used them to smuggle supplies to a German blockaded area. So every time you look into this stuff, you're finding, guess who did that? Ian Fleming.
Right.
Oh, who did that? Ian Fleming. Oh, who came up with that idea? Oh, Ian Fleming. If I was like a Saturday Night Live skit, I would have – a skit, a running skit like MacGruber and all these other crazy ones. I'd have a, Ian Fleming did it. Oh, who did that? Ian Fleming. It'd be like this whole punchline of this running skit would be they would uncover something and then say, damn, Ian Fleming did this.
Right.
So it's like everything is being done by Ian Fleming.
Mike, how long have you been actually going through all this research, and what got you interested in starting it in the first place?
It's the same kind of concept of discovering a, you know, epiphany moment. So I'm reading a book called The Hunt for Zero Point by Nick Cook, who's an, you know, Jane's aerospace writer. He's not some kook, okay?
Okay.
So he's saying we're looking for zero point energy, which is the energy that just comes out of another dimension that we can collect, free energy. And, of course, tied in with that is the idea we're going to then take this energy and negate gravity and create anti-gravity craft, i.e. flying saucers.
Mm-hmm.
And so Nick Cook is writing this book about how the Germans were doing this in World War II. And so he's establishing a credible, not just some, you know, Nazi cheerleader book here about how they were actually working on this stuff. And then in the middle of the book, he says, well, one group of people that would know about the Nazi escape and the high technologies would be Commander Ian Fleming's 30 Assault Unit.
Wow.
Who captured all of the German naval records by war's end. And I go, whoop, whoa, wait, stop, wait
yeah.
a minute. I thought Ian Fleming was just a paper pusher making these stories up. I didn't know he had his own intelligence gathering commando unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that led me to, whoa, go back and read everything that Ian Fleming said from the perspective of truth, find out everything I can about this 30 Assault Unit. And I'm not the only one. I think other people are on this case. I may have started the movement, but this James Bond is real movement is picking up speed like a snowball.
Wow. Okay, so give us some of the insights that you've gained then, you know, or what I guess what are like the mainstream, or before you started this research, what are the mainstream interpretation of Ian Fleming's work? And then start talking a little bit about
it. It's a character assassination. I think it's a character assassination. I mean, I don't think this is just an accident that as soon as Ian Fleming died, supposedly one of his best friends wrote his biography, and it's like he had it instantly. You know, this is before the internet, and Pearson's his name. I don't like the guy. He basically smears Fleming, saying he was just a guy going out for drink and women and song and money. All right, and that is not what Ian Fleming was all about. If you read his stories, that is not what James Bond is driven by. He's driven by duty to do the decent thing and to help the people. You know, so that doesn't compute.
Right.
And so their idea is that Ian Fleming did something in World War II, didn't get to do what he wanted. He was like a Walter Mitty type and dreamt of other people doing things, and then he retired to Jamaica and sat all day lounging in the water and chasing women and writing these stories up. That is not true. That is a complete disinformation lie. When Ian Fleming left the Royal Navy Volunteer Reserve, it was in 1951. That means he stayed on for 6 years after World War II. When he left active duty, he joined Kemsley Newspapers and worked as a foreign manager of their whole foreign service. So it's an intelligence gathering service. And before World War II, he was working as a junior reporter for Reuters. And Reuters is owned by MI6, Military Intelligence Group 6 of British government.
Okay.
Special Intelligence Service, SIS. He was a junior agent before the war. War began. He worked for Naval Intelligence Division. Then he left, joined Kemsley Newspaper, and I have proof from his name is Nigel West. That's his pen name, but his real name is Rupert Allison. He's wrote a book called Ian Fleming's Historical Dictionary of World War II. And it's a dictionary, so no one's going to read it from cover to cover except me or some crazy person.
Right.
So I read the entire thing, and in it right there, he found out that Ian Fleming was writing for MI6. The whole point of writing Casino Royale was for the IRD, Information Research Division of MI6. We said, hey, Ian, we're hurting. We got these moles. They're coming out of the woodwork, the Cambridge 5 spies. We're not looking so good. We need some public relations positive spin. Will you write the super spy? And he, of course, sure, I wanted to do that anyway.
Right.
So he was writing for MI6. He is an MI6 agent until he died. Ian Fleming did not go to the Jamaica and just goof off. He only went to Jamaica 3 months a year. For the other 9 months of the year, he's in London as a workaholic. So this playboy myth is being fed by the establishment to try to get the people of the world to not take James Bond seriously, just think it's fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
When it's farthest from the truth. And they decoded that. They basically say, hey, this guy Fleming is starting to tell the sheeple the truth about how we're running the world with secret societies, deep underground military bases, anti-gravity craft. Fleming is writing this in code, you know, in his books, and they did found out about it and didn't like it. And one of the famous researchers of the JFK world, Jim Mars, when I talked to him about James Bond is real, he came up with the idea, you know, maybe they knocked him off. Now, if you don't take care of yourself and you excessively drink and smoke like Fleming did, it's easy for somebody to give you a heart attack.
Right.
Right. So that's bad. But the timing of his death right before the Warren Commission report came out is very suspect. And that's what Jim Mars is saying. Jim is saying that Ian was a friend of President Kennedy. President Kennedy invited him to the White House, and he gave some ideas how to overthrow Castro, which were very clever. And Ian Fleming got a start from JFK putting, you know, From Russia with Love on his favorite reading list. That's what really got him mega popular.
Oh.
He was, you know, mildly popular before. But when John F. Kennedy said, you know, the sexy president, young president, said, I like this guy, James Bond, that's when it went to the mega level.
Hmm.
And if Fleming had said, wait a minute, this is a group ambush in Dealey Plaza, there's too many bullets for one guy, and he had said this in 1964, people would have believed him. Because, you know, Ian Fleming is developing a worldwide following, so they had to knock him off. So I would not be surprised that they killed him.
I wouldn't surprise me anything with what the CIA is capable of now, you know. I'm wondering, though, I don't know all of Ian Fleming's titles. Like, I guess if I were to go back and look at all of them, I'd probably be able to correlate them to movies. But I grew up watching a lot of the James Bond
stuff. Well, you got to go from the beginning and then go to the end.
Right.
And the best way to do that is start with Casino
Royale. Was that the first book, Casino Royale?
Moonraker is an extremely important book. Now, I could say go to YouTube and listen to it, which is good because some people just will not read. But every time you go to YouTube, they keep taking down the audiobooks. But
right.
They'll be there. But you can listen to Moonraker. It is an extremely important book because, ironically, the conclusions we came to in James Bond is Real about the Nazis bringing the scientist over, and I even wrote a short story, and a lot of the ideas that I came up with on my own, Fleming wrote about him in Moonraker. He had this guy pretending to be an industrialist trying to help the West, Hugo Drax. I hate to give it away, guys, but a lot of you are not going to read, okay? So we don't have time for this. So we've got to get down to the chase here. He was actually a Nazi SS commando of Skorzenys, is what Drax really was.
Okay.
And that missile that was going to be launched in a test does not have nothing, a test, you know, instrumental package inside. It's got a nuclear warhead, and the missile's going to strike London, financial center of the world, and they're going to make a killing on the stock market. Now, what does that sound like?
Sounds like a plan by the Rothschilds to me.
Right, but it also sounds like 9/11, doesn't
it? Also probably a plan by the Rothschilds, so maybe a coincidence or not. I don't know.
Well, that's what the thing that you have to realize is that there's two groups of Illuminati working against each other at times for, you know, rivalry to see who's in charge of the New World Order. You got the Rothschilds in England, which Ian Fleming, because he's a member of a banking family, his father was killed in World War I heroically, and mom lived on, but wasn't very affectionate. But, you know, Fleming adored women. He's not a misogynist. He's trying to do the right thing and be the hero, and that's Ian Fleming's James Bond. This anti-hero crap that you're getting from Skyfall, a terrible movie, I hate it, is anti-James Bond stuff that's coming from Sony Pictures. Sony stands for Standard Oil of New York. And I can't say the word because you're on FCC. Those people are trying to ruin James Bond because James Bond is a hero. He goes out and finds out what's wrong, who's doing these conspiracies, and he's doing it solo because Ian Fleming is not doing it just as a plot device to get him into, you know, a captivity so the guy gives the monologue, you know, the evil villain. Yes, he's doing that, but that's just one layer of what Ian Fleming is doing. What Ian Fleming is trying to tell the people of the world is to be a James Bond citizen. Okay, to go out, find out where these openings in the ground are for the deep underground military bases, where the anti-gravity craft are coming out, take pictures, get GPS coordinates. He's trying to get people of the world to act like James Bond. Because obviously you say, well, James Bond was a member of, you know, MI6, SIS. Before you go into some dangerous place, you got backup.
Right.
So as soon as you have trouble, you hit some kind of hidden device and the cavalry comes in, the commandos rappel, parachute in, kick some butt, and he saves a girl, which is a James Bond movie, and I resent that they haven't been doing that in the James Bond movies because Standard Oil of New York, Sony Pictures, is a Rockefeller or Illuminati group, and they're trying to ruin the James Bond message and theme, and it's coming from the CIA. Because before Skyfall, there was Quantum of Solace. And in that movie, and it may not be a great James Bond movie, but they nailed the CIA for being the fascist Nazi scum that they are. And I think the CIA retaliated. After Skyfall, suddenly Ian Productions couldn't get funding for a James Bond movie? Come on, it's a guaranteed thing.
Yeah.
It's the most, you know, successful movie franchise ever, and you can't get funding? That smells of the Rockefeller Illuminati, which loves violence, which loves taking people's resources all over the world, retaliating against the movie.
Wow.
So it looks like Skyfall, if you look at it, they've got some throwaway lines in there. Well, if anyone at the CIA still likes us. I mean, they have some sour grape lines in that movie that clearly looks like Sony Pictures said, we'll fund your movie all right, but we want our guy Logan, you know, in the works, mm-hmm. writing the script and putting our spin on things. And it's an anti-British intelligence movie. Skyfall, it sucks. I mean, I'm sorry, guys. It's an anti-James Bond movie. I mean, they blow up the Aston Martin DB5. I mean,
right.
what more do you need? I mean, you got Bond being killed by – you got me going. Get killed by M, who betrayed him. He becomes an alcoholic. I mean, it's just a bunch of bogus crap. Mm. And they had no reason for it. If you wanted to get Judi Dench out of there, you retire her. That's what happens to real intelligence service chiefs, except for Colby, who looks kind of suspicious. But for most of the part, they retire and go fish or do whatever they do. You know,
right.
Write their memoirs and get it heavily redacted.
Right.
Okay.
That's just interesting because you're talking about, you know, the theme of James Bond being that he was kind of this solo guy going out and really looking for truth and trying to fight against any type of corrupt power, whether it was his own bosses or not. And I could see how there would be an agenda mounted to try and quell that, because that's obviously not something that they want us all thinking about. But I was curious, too, about – you mentioned the infighting, kind of the – we see instances of the elite parties or the elite families infighting. Do you see – individual incidents of that occurring in Ian Fleming's works also? I mean, does he outline some of the infighting that's going on too, or elucidate any of the clues that are that?
Well, yeah. In some of his scripts, you will see that the Spectre, which is really the Illuminati, because your Spectre, you know, is an acronym, right? Special Directorate to Extortion and Terrorism and all that. But really, it's also a word, Spectre, right? You take RE off and put it in front of SPECT, and it becomes RESPECT. What, it's an anagram. And another person said it's also an anagram for saber or scepter or something like that. Anyway, the point is it's an anagram for respect, and that's what the right-wing Rockefeller Illuminati are all about. They're all about respect. They want people to fear them, look up to them. I mean, I don't know what that gets you, you know, an orgasm or something out of this. But anyway, you whatever respect is what they're after, and they don't mind killing people and throwing people in ovens and death camps to do that. So respect is what they're after, and then you will see in Ian Fleming's work that Spectre is always turning on their own people once they've, you know, got done using him, like the guy that in Thunderball that hijacked the bomber, okay, he was used, they got him in the water, killed him. So
right.
They're always constantly turning on their own. So it's not a group to work for and expect a workers' comp complaints. If
you're not going to get the
Spectre.
Holding out for the big gold watch, I guess.
On my back, you know, this guy Bond shot me with a, you know, spear gun, and I got an infection in my abdomen, and it took me 6 months to heal. Do I get workers' comp? And the guy knocking the door, Spectre, you know, octopus ring, boom, you know, bullet to the head.
Right.
Your workers' comp.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the true story of Ian Fleming then, because I think, you know, we're kind of getting into the disinfo side and trying to dispel some of the disinfo, but I want people to have a really good idea of who Ian Fleming really was, actually, according to your research, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, we're going to go straight to the punch here, all right? Ian Fleming actually went on real missions. He was a member of the, intelligentsia running the war, which means he knows the ultra secret. And I highly recommend everyone read Anthony K. Brown's book, Bodyguard of Lies. If you don't read Bodyguard of Lies, you have no right to complain about how the world is run, because you will not understand how the world is run. Because Bodyguard of Lies explains how we won World War II, which is by cheating. We lied to the Germans and outsmarted them. But here's an example. In Bodyguard of Lies, I talk about how the British would build a phony base, right? Make it look like it's one of their bases. They would then get into a captured German bomber, bomb their own base. At the same time, the real German bombers are bombing somewhere else. So the real German bombers would look over and say, hey, they're bombing over there. So the real German bombers would report back, hey, they totally started to incinerate this base over here. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
By the level of deception?
Oh,
this is something the American people cannot understand. They cannot understand several layers of lies and deception. So that's why you've got to read Bodyguard of Lies, because it's more than just, hey, we had the ultra secret, we cracked their codes, we had the little Enigma machine of the rovers, which is a good movie to watch, Enigma. Very good movie. Kate Winslet's in it before she had her boob job, but she still looks pretty good. But anyway, you can watch Enigma. It's a good movie, and it'll tell you about how we, you know, basically barely won World War II because of British trickery. But the point is that Ian Fleming is doing that stuff at the war's end. He was then available to do missions, because the people are saying, well, we can't have Fleming parachuting somewhere because they're going to hang him upside down and find out that we've got, you know, the ultra secret. But by 1945, Germany's done, okay? So there's no reason why Ian Fleming couldn't, and he did go on missions. Okay, the non-controversial is at the end of the war, he went to the German archives, took all their records and put it on a big boat, took it back, and he knows how to read German, so he'd speed read it. And the assumption then would be when he must know about the exodus to Antarctica and South America, okay, and anti-gravity crap. But before that, Fleming went into Berlin, parachuted with a team of people in Operation James Bond.
What?
That's the name of the mission. Before he created James Bond, he was thinking about creating a fictional character from the guy that wrote Birds of the West Indies. And he went to Jamaica in a conference in 1943. So he said, hey, that's pretty cool. Cool day. Anyway, he said, well, let's name this Operation James Bond. So with a guy named Christopher Crichton, whose real name is John Ainsworth Davis, they parachuted into Lake Mogulsee, okay, because Berlin's surrounded by the Russians. The only way in out is by water.
Okay.
So they parachuted in by bomber. And I verified that this is feasible, and a cop, a secret unit of the British commandos, reconnaissance unit, was parachuting in their kayaks by bomb bay. In other words, you don't parachute out of a transport plane and try to push this kayak out the cargo door. You've got a bomb bay. So bomb bay opens, instead of bombs, out comes the kayaks.
Okay.
And then in another place in the bomber, the parachutists, whatever you want to call it, commandos with swim fins, you know, parachute in. So the kayaks land by parachute here. The swimmers land here. They ditch their parachutes. One didn't, unfortunately drowned. But anyway, they swim to the kayaks, de-rig the parachute, get inside the kayaks, kayak up the Spree River, get to the, you know, Reich's Chancellery building. They get radio comms of headquarters, go into the Reich Chancellery building, meet up with Martin Bormann, pull him out. They have an escape group formed. They get to the bridge, and there's a famous incident there because they brought a doppelganger. You know how you have the Star Trek, when they landing party, the guy in the red shirt
always dies.
Meet him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that actually happened in real life with the doppelganger. On this mission, they brought a guy who was a German, you know, a German prisoner, and they changed his dental records. Hey, we're taking you in here. Okay, we got a job for you. We're going to change your dental here. Oh, okay. Do I get some extra food? Sure. Oh, we're also going to take you along on a mission. Oh, okay. Beats being in a prison camp, right?
Right.
They sacrificed him. The point of the body was to be found to make it look like he was Martin Bormann. So the escape group forms up behind a tank. The tank gets into a battle with the Russian forces. The tank gets hit, blows up. Hey, our doppelganger guy died without us having to shoot him. Yay! Okay, let's continue on with the kayaks. So the group kayaks, you know, downriver. Fleming gets a call. He has to leave the mission. And then, you know, Crichton and John Ainsworth Davis finishes the mission up. And Morton Bormann is freed. And I believe, I haven't a chance to write about this in the next book, but I would write about he was deliberately let loose, not only to get the money that he promised, you know, from Swiss bank accounts to help rebuild England, which we think now wasn't given to England, it was used to get England's nuclear bomb. So how can England, who's got no money, can't feed their people, suddenly has a nuclear bomb?
Right.
All right. So money came from somewhere. But I also think they, British intelligence, according to Stevenson in his book, Martin Bormann Brotherhood, they did a psychological eval of Bormann and said he cannot keep a low profile. So I believe in what we call rabbit theory. The rabbit, which is the name coming from, you know, A.A. Milne's books, you know, Christopher Robin, Winnie the Pooh, you know, all that guys,
yeah.
Those guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rabbit was Hitler, and then when he left the picture, rabbit became Bormann. And rabbit theory, in my idea, is that since he couldn't keep a low profile, they let him loose so they could track the Fourth Reich. In other words, MI6 said, let him go, and that way we can keep track of what they're doing in South America or Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is I think Bormann was aware of it, because Bormann jumping around South America and deliberately leading, you know, tell agencies astray and making it look like, well, he doesn't really have a big network. He must be just running on in his own. He's running for his life. And that's what I call the low-technology German defeat theory. Basically, okay, those guys, we did let him get away, a bunch of them. Not too many. And they're just running for their lives, and they're chasing women, and they're just living it up with the money that they got from all the dead bodies, you know, that they killed.
Right.
And, you know, shame on us, but, you know, they're going to die off. Forget about it. That's low-technology German defeat theory. Of Ladislas Farrago, Aftermath, and all these other people. Which, incidentally, Farrago says in Aftermath that he doesn't know how Mormon got out of Berlin. He says a rescue group got him.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. So Bormann's escape by Fleming and Crichton, Ainsworth Davis, is not refuted by the low-technology German defeat people. In other words, it's not contradicted. So I'm looking for these points. And I did interview John Ainsworth Davis before he passed away last year and verified his story. I talked to him many times,
mm-hmm.
and I have another colleague who's got a lot of information on him, including video interviews and everything, and it's going good. You know, we verified his story and got the documents and stuff that makes it look like, yeah, Ian Fleming went on this mission. He helped get this guy out, and then that would explain why Ian Fleming's depressed.
You know, right, yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
Another colleague thinks Fleming got Hitler out. You know, his name is Greg Hallett. He's a New Zealand historian. He says when Fleming got called away, he went to back to Lake Mogulsee, met up with Hitler and Braun in a mini sub.
Okay, I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to interrupt you. I apologize. We've got to go to a quick 3-minute break, Mike. I want everybody to go to jamesbondisforreal.com and look into getting this book, because I think this is the reviews on Amazon are outstanding. Jamesbondisforreal.com is Mike Sparks' website where you can get that book. And when we come back, I want to talk about whether or not Ian Fleming was integral into getting Hitler out of Germany. Hope you guys stick with us through that. We've got a 3-minute break. We'll come right back. Mike Sparks is our guest. Keep it here, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Down the rabbit hole with Popeye, Tuesday through Friday, Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to Red Pill Reports, ladies and gentlemen. My name's JD. We are live right now, moving into the final segment of our guest hour today on the live broadcast. And, of course, joined by Mr. Mark Sparks, who is the who is the author of James Bond is Real. And we're talking about the true story, as has been uncovered by Mr. Sparks' research, into the life of Ian Fleming and kind of finding out some information that Mr. Ian Fleming may have been way more active in the espionage arena than the mainstream powers that be would like you to believe. And again, I want to highly recommend people go and check this book out at the website jamesbondisforreal.com. And, of course, that's Mike Sparks' website where you can get this book. Mike, before the break, we had just kind of started to talk about Ian Fleming potentially being integral into the Nazis leaving Germany, and the Nazi that we're speaking of right now would be the kingpin himself, Mr. Adolf Hitler. So do you have information that suggests, or is this counter to your research? What do you think about all that?
Well, there's several different theories, of course. Now, I want to lay them all out. You've got basically the U-boat theory, which is discounted by a lot of people because Hitler was claustrophobic. You have the theory where he went by his own power using KG-200, which is a special operations unit of the Luftwaffe that somehow landed in an area still under enough control where he could get a strip of land, land road that could land a Ju-52 trimotor plane so that they could pick up Braun and Hitler from an underground approach. In other words, they went under the cellar. Now, that is in the book called Grey Wolf, which is written by Dunstan, and I forget the other guy's name, but they're very, discredited because they stole a lot of research from a guy in South America, April Bastide, and didn't give him any credit for it. So they're trying to say, you know, Nazis, we're strong, we flew ourselves out. But the guy I was talking about earlier, Hitler Was a British Agent, is the book by Greg Hallett. He says basically when he diverted from the mission, OPJB, he met up with Adolf Hitler and Braun in a mini-sub, which was only for a short period of time just to get out of the congested waterway to the lake. Then a Ju-52 float plane with Hannah Reich, and she was quite the babe factor. I kind of like her. Okay. Hannah Reich was a hot chick, Nazi pilot. I love her. Anyway, she lands her Ju-52, poster child girl, And she lands. He gets on the plane. Fleming escorts them in a Lysander, short takeoff and landing plane. And Greg has gone to London and seen the actual Lysander plane on display, and the serial numbers match. He's got testimony of the pilot saying that, yeah, he flew Fleming in the Lysander with Hitler to Spain. So that the theory from Greg Hallett is Hitler then went to Spain, which makes sense, because why did Hitler keep Spain out of the war and lose World War II? I can go into great detail about that, because that's why they lost World War II. Because if Hitler gets Gibraltar, he closes the Med and turns it into a lake, a Nazi lake, then Rommel gets resupplied. Rommel takes Egypt. Rommel gets to oil wells in the Middle East. He links up with the armies coming down from Russia, Nazi armies, and he links up with Japan. Guess what? We're speaking German.
Right. Wow.
But that didn't happen. So why didn't Hitler close the Med? I think Ian Fleming, I'll give you a loan of my research leads, I think Ian Fleming talked to Admiral Canaris, a real unsung hero of World War II. The leader of the German Ab War was named Wilhelm Canaris, and he did not like the Nazis. He was a great human being. I believe Fleming met with Canaris in Portugal or Spain, but whatever, Canaris is the one who talked Hitler out of taking Spain. Hitler was saying, you know, those guys, we need the Gibraltar guys. These guys in Spain are not really much of an ally being neutral like this. Why don't we go take it? And Canaris talked him out of it.
Wow.
That saves the day. That saves World War II. If this doesn't stop, if this doesn't get prevented from happening, we lose World War II. That's what people don't understand, how close we came to losing it. And Hitler was a British agent, Hallett saying that Hitler deep down inside was working for the British, because there's a missing time in Hitler's life where 1910 and 11, where he's hanging out in England.
Really?
Destitute. Oh, yeah. And he's saying that he went to good old Tavistock unit to get the Britney Spears treatment.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, there's a lot of conjecture that he was super tied into the Rothschild banking dynasty. I mean, if you look at some of the secret symbols that represent both, you know, even the swastika, even some of the other things, the Dark Sun type stuff. He's got a lot of links to the financial districts in London, I believe.
Well, Hitler, as British agent, is a brilliant book by Hallett. He says that basically he was an illegitimate, you know, I can't say the B word, right? B child of a Rothschild. Hitler was a Rothschild.
Really?
So the idea is that the Rothschilds need war. So to do it, the Rothschilds fund both sides. So in World War II, Plan A was for the Nazis to fight the Soviet communists. So the Soviet communists are made by the Rothschild money. You know, that's easy to check up on that.
Right.
You know, the gold and Lenin and all that shenanigans. So they're creating a boogeyman there for World War II, which is part World War I, Part II. And then Rockefeller Illuminati money created the Nazis. And the idea was they were both going to fight each other.
Yes.
And make a lot of war munitions and profit. And for some strange reason, I don't have the answer for this. This is where the listeners can help here. Some reason, the Prime Minister of England, Neville Chamberlain, was listening to MI5. MI5 is the Internal Security Agency of England, you know, like the FBI is here.
Okay.
Now, why is the Prime Minister listening to MI5 tell them about Hitler? That's not their job. Their job is to keep traitors out of England. But for some reason, they called him a name I can't say on the radio.
Okay.
They called him a wimp, but it was a worse word. And it so infuriated Neville Chamberlain, he said, we're going to defend Poland and Greece and all of these countries. And the English had no way of doing that. There's no way the landlocked nation of Poland could be defended by the Royal Navy, okay, or the British Army can't get there. So he made this promise. It infuriates Hitler. It makes Stalin sign a pact with Hitler, the Molotov-Ribbentrop thing, you know, the non-aggression pact. We almost lose World War II because of it. And Hitler goes west. The plan A was for Hitler to go east and to destroy himself, you know, both sides would destroy themselves gloriously, right, and leave the West alone. It sounds like a double cross, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely does. It kind of makes you wonder about Putin and his involvement today, because I'm kind of the opinion that World War III was supposed to start when that Gaza initiative started in Israel. Remember the day they shot down MH17? I think that was supposed to be, you know, day one, World War III opening day, and we kind of averted that. I got to pause real quick, though. I hate to interrupt you because this is such fantastic information, but I just wanted to remind the listeners that in our news segment and the show segment that we have on the website every day, at the very bottom of that, underneath all the news articles, I always put a featured video, and I put an hour-long featured video up last night that completely goes through the Rothschild banking dynasty and how they got all of their money throughout the years, and a lot of it is exactly like what Mike is talking about right now, basically profiting on both sides of war, funding both sides, going all the way back even to the Napoleonic era. That's just how these people make their money. So I just wanted to point that out, that if anybody has doubts about the involvement with the Rothschild banking dynasty and all of this and their involvement in the City of London, that is a fantastic video that's in the news segment that you guys can go check
out. I've got some videos, too. You can go to YouTube and go to Dynamic Para number 2. And everything that I'm talking about, I have videos backing it up. So that's D-Y-N-M-I-C-P-A-R-A 2. Or you can look up the movie New Spy versus Divided Evil. I re-edited an old Euro spy movie and made it a James Bond movie.
Oh, nice.
And people seem to really like it. It really is a great movie and just needed a better title and some James Bond music. Hey, you can put paint drying and James Bond music and you're grooving.
I mean, I'd watch awesome. It for at least 20 minutes, yeah.
Have you seen it already?
No. I'm just saying you could put – no, I was saying you could put drying paint and put the James Bond movie up. I'd probably be interested in that for a little while.
James Bond music?
Yeah.
Hey, good for a while.
I want to open up the phone lines to listeners, too, just in case anybody has questions that I'm not capable of thinking of right now. So if you guys are out there listening, you have questions or comments for Mr. Mike Sparks, please give us a call, 866-37-TRUTH or 866-378-7884. And as soon as I see – and hop into the phone line there, I will get you guys on the air.
Let me throw another movie out there.
Do it.
Okay, Eyes Wide Shut. If people don't know who the Rothschilds are, watch Eyes Wide Shut.
I'll tell you what, man. I've tried to watch that movie like four or five times. I own it. It seems like there are major portions of that movie that were not in the movie. It's just like there's so much discontinuity in that movie. I can't get my mind around what the heck is.
Watch the movie. You got beautiful women in there. And one of the beautiful women saves Tom Cruise. She's heroically saves him. I mean, what more do you want? I mean, I like beautiful women. I mean, the Rothschilds are not that bad. It's compared to the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers like violence. And if you need to understand America, read Hepburn's book, Farewell America. Read the second chapter. And it talks about how Americans are sons of Calvin. We're Puritans. We're down on sex. We love material gain, material wealth. And that means you're going to murder people. You're going to have to murder the Indians. Whoever's got something that you want, you're going to go murder them. And believe me, in the listing of sins, thou shalt not kill is worse of a sin than sex out of wedlock. So I have to say, if you have to choose your poison, the Rothschilds are the lesser of the two evils. Hmm. And, you know, you can watch the Eyes Wide Shut, and you see some beautiful women, and they're a little mean about it. But compared to the Rockefellers, our Illuminati in America are really nasty.
Right.
You know, they go around murdering people. That was their plan at the end of World War II. So the plan at the beginning of World War II was supposed to be the Rothschild's baby, which is, Stalin. You know, everyone group hug, share things, right?
Okay.
Versus Hitler, the Rockefeller Illuminati guy experiment, which is pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, Farfik, Nubigan, you know, work hard 60 hours a week and you'll get your VW bug, never happens. But all that stuff, you're supposed to be – those two forces were supposed to destroy each other. It didn't happen because for some reason somebody called the prime minister a name. And I have to say that the guy that they're working for, evil, is working for not God. So who do you think they're working for? Okay, who do you think that could possibly be? I don't know. Who could that be? Maybe Satan, right?
Yeah.
So if you're working for Satan, Lucifer, I think he threw him under the bus. I think he said, okay, you guys set up the Germans, Nazi Republic, Fascist Republic, and you go set up the Communists, and you guys are going to have a great war and make a lot of money. And I think because they're working for a guy that hates human beings, I think he gave him a little surprise.
Hmm.
We're going to pretend like we're going to defend Poland, and now Hitler's going west.
Interesting.
So that's my theory. I hate to say it, but as far as I can tell, it looks like supernatural intervention. Now, Erin Dawkins, you know, she's a truth traveler. She says that the Lord did this. And that's another possibility. You know, the Lord just said, okay, you jerks, you're going to try to incinerate a bunch of people. We're going to not let it be so friendly for you guys in the Illuminati. We're going to have Hitler go west for a while. So anyway, but what I'm saying is the end of the war caused the Illuminati to change. They said, look, things did not go according to plan. We have these guys like Ian Fleming, Harold Goulding, Commander DSO, Commander of the Small Boats. You've got James Gavin, General Patton, Matthew Ridgway. You got these guys that are really good getting the chance to be in charge, and they ended World War II too soon. And so they slowed down the war you know, by not allowing Patton to go in there and end the war or disrupting the Montgomery's kind of screwed up airborne operation. They gave Germany, the Germans, you know, the Nazis, a chime to escape. You know, at least 250,000 escaped to South America and Antarctica with high technology. So I call it high technology German defeat theory.
Why?
Anyway, that's a theory that Joseph Farrell is the guy who's created the most discussion of it. This other guy, I forget his name. But anyway, theory is that they left in good order. And so as that's crumbling, the Illuminati said, never again. We're never going to have people like Ian Fleming in charge of things. And so you see happening at the end of World War II, the public, you know, wanting a flip-flop and wanting something different than New Deal, FDR. They put Truman in before the election, getting rid of Henry Wallace. See, if FDR had actually died because of natural causes, and I suspect he was poisoned at Warm Springs, but they put their guy in as vice president. That's standard, you know, coup d'etat SOP.
Right.
You put your guy in before you knock off the top guy. And so Truman was terrible. Truman, even though he's a Democrat, he was doing whatever the Illuminati wanted. And they said disband the OSS, which Ian Fleming helped create, which is a moral anti-fascist intelligence agency, and said, we don't want a Gestapo on American shores. And then 2 years later, what does Truman do? He signs the CIA into existence using 50% of the personnel are Nazi war criminals.
Wow.
And the CIA ever since has not been exporting democracy. See, that's what Henry Wallace, the vice president, a little kooky, but he would have, as president, exported democracy around the world. You know, in the aftermath of the colonial powers collapse, World War II, he would have gotten all these third world countries on their feet because he was a farmer. And Henry Wallace was a good man. If he was president, he would have made an America we would have been all proud of. And I mean not arrogant, but sense of accomplishment proud.
Right.
He would have made an America and kept the OSS, and we would have been spreading democracy to fight communism, not spreading Wall Street greed to fight communism, which is what the CIA does. And
right.
If you don't believe me, you can read a book by Bloom. I forget the name of it, but it's just Spreading Despair. I forget the name Bloom. Bloom's book, but he just shows how since World War II, the CIA has been spreading despair, you know, having dictatorships supposedly notionally democratic, but meanwhile the people are cracking the whip, working in the fields for pennies, you know, on the dollar.
Absolutely. I mean, look at what just happened in Kiev, for God's sakes. I mean, if that wasn't a CIA-funded NGO, George Soros campaign to, you know, install a junta, I don't know that we'd ever see a better example, you know.
Well, that's why I tell people to read that book, Bodyguard of Lies. If you don't read that, you will not understand how the world is run. And now, we talked earlier, but we talked about there's three layers above the nation-state political figureheads.
Right.
That's another thing that sheeple do not understand. There are three layers above. And if you try to figure out, well, wait, Obama says that he's a liberal. Why is he doing expanding the war? Wait a minute. So-and-so is supposed to be a conservative. Why is he borrowing and spending? Why is W. Bush doing this? Hello? There are three levels above the nation-state figureheads. Those levels are the intelligence agencies are above the law. You have the banksters. They're above the law. And then you got the secret societies. And who are they? Watch the movie Eyes Wide Shut. You see a nice little orgy in a British mansion. You watch, Alex Jones stuff about the Bohemian Grove. I mean, if you need a visual, who the secret societies are,
or just
these are these guys that meet.
Look in the news today.
Bilderbergers.
I'll say look in the news today about the story of, Prince Andrew and the pedophile ring being connected with Epstein right now. You know, the royal family over there, they can veto any FOIA request or whatever the FOIA, you know, equivalent is in the UK.
Right.
They can veto that. They can take programming off of the BBC. You know, there was going to be a big documentary about Princess Diana, and the royal family said, nah, we're not going to show that to anybody. So you don't even have to look at, you know, the creepy factor. You just have to look at the people who consider themselves to be above you right now, you know?
Right, and their actions are called guilty demeanor. They're not acting in good faith. And that's what the people cannot understand. They say, but Obama's supposed to be this liberal guy, and W. Bush is supposed to be this conservative guy. You don't understand. These are just flavorings of different Illuminati poison.
Yes.
You could choose either a liberal left-wing poison, where we're going to have this group hug and share everything and it'll be a welfare state, or you're going to have everyone pulling themselves by the bootstraps by ever-decreasing job opportunities. You know, it's choose your poison, but it's both Illuminati poison.
Right.
You know, right-wing Illuminati, which is violence-oriented, or the Rothschilds, which are sex-oriented. Well, and if so this, that's why you got the pedophile rings and all that crazy stuff. I mean, just see what I'm trying to say? See how it all fits together?
Well, yeah.
There's either Rothschilds are sex obsessed, and the Rockefellers are violence death obsessed.
Well, I'll tell you, we're about ready to see, I think, in this next election, the most, you know, in-your-face example of a complete oligarchy, you know, coming back. We got two dynasties, essentially, with Jeb and with Hillary.
Vote for either of those traitors. Both of them should be in prison. Hillary, when she was, first lady, she and Bill murdered people.
Yes.
She should be in prison.
Yes.
Okay? And Jeb Bush, I'm sure he did something dastardly in Florida. That's a real clean, honest state, right?
Right. So,
facetiously, right?
Right.
Both of those two clowns are Illuminati families. And if the American people vote for any of them, then the American people deserve what they get. We should vote for neither. I think we should actually not vote. You say, wait a minute, you're throwing your vote away? No. If you vote, then that means you are saying, I agree to the two choices. No.
Yes.
We need to show that the social contract is broken.
Yep.
We are not being represented by a decent person working for we the people. We got two people working for they the secret societies, or they the corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever way of level of intensity of evil that you will accept. Some people can't handle synarchy, which is the idea of elites running the world. Fine. Just say the corporations. You know, that's easier for people to get around and say yes.
Right.
All right. But there's more goals than just greed. But that's something American people are greedy in their own low-level ways so they can understand it. But really, Illuminati have more goals than just greed. One, obviously, is maximize profits. But two, they want to destroy the individual that can count, the individual that has a conscience, like Norman Rockwell's painting, Freedom of Speech, where that guy saves the day. He's
yep.
looking up at the meeting. He's a working man, but he took time off work to come to the city hall meeting, and the city hall is going to do something stupid, and they're going to have like a bullpall railvac plant, and it's going to poison the whole city. This guy's going to save the day. He's going to be at the meeting and say, you knuckleheads, you thought about what happens if the plant blows up and the chemicals spread over the city. Everyone's going to be dead. He's the guy who saves the day. They don't want that guy. They don't want that Norman Rockwell freedom of speech guy to exist.
Mm-hmm.
They want him bogged down with paying mortgages and Obamacare, which is all about destroying the middle class. It's nothing about medical care. Just bogging people down so I have no money to fight City Hall. That's what it's all about. They want to destroy the individual of conscience that can give a damn. And the James Bond citizen. The next goal they want to do is obviously depopulate the world. They think that the population of the world is too much. There are 7 billion people on the planet. They'd like to see 6 billion of us just go away.
Right.
Okay. And then the last goal I articulated in my book was they want everyone in the same sheet of music because, you know, what happens if Lucifer doesn't win? You know, okay, we die and we're going to meet the Lord. They're going to go, hey, God, I was just doing what everyone else was doing.
Right.
You know, one world government. I mean, don't blame me. I was trying to be responsible. These people were just wanted to eat resources like Malthus. You know, Thomas Malthus said this fruit fly experiment. If you give fruit flies, some goo and they're just going to eat and kill themselves from overpopulation. That's Thomas Malthus and the fruit fly experiment.
Okay.
Anyway, but we're not fruit flies. We're human beings. Hello. We can be reasoned with. Say, stop pumping out kids. You know, in the United States of America, we have 310 million Americans. You know we're the number 3 largest nation in the world right now?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It's shocking. We're number 3. Number 2 is India.
India, right. And China.
Number 1 is China.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we are getting crowded. And why is that? Because we have 4 million people being born each year in the United States. And we've got 2 million dying. You know, 2 million dying are half of it's heart attack, the other half's cancer. And the rest of it's, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and car accidents. So
right.
The Illuminati are not killing people up fast enough. So that's why we have to worry about this war stuff. But, you know, World War II was a big disappointment for them. Only 62 million people died in World War II.
Right.
They wanted a few billion. So, you see, these guys are also getting old. David Rockefeller, you know, Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski. Hey, proud that I can pronounce that right? Okay.
That's
anyway,
great.
These guys are getting old, and they got nothing to lose. They're going to meet Lucifer or, oops, they're going to meet the Lord. So, you know, they could get desperate. So I've actually not a new goal of the Illuminati that I didn't have in the book. And that would be the fifth goal, which is eternal life. They want eternal life through technology.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the Illuminati are taking all this money that they're getting from taxes and putting it in black projects to find basically ways to keep David Rockefeller alive.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, stem cells, whatever it takes. You know, chicks with big hooters. You know, whatever it takes to keep him alive, they're going to do it. And
right.
So they're using that money, and they're using the money in secret black programs. So I think the fifth goal of the Illuminati probably should be like the fourth, and the fifth should be the fourth, what was previously the fourth, should move down. Basically, they want eternal life through turning man into a half machine.
Right.
Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen that movie, that new Johnny Depp movie, Transcendence, that just came out. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I haven't. I liked Inception with Christopher Nolan.
Transcendence is pretty telling because it's
But it's transhumanism is what it's all
yeah,
about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and to me, that's got to be the goal. You know, we're at a point now where it seems like they don't need a consumer class of people on the planet anymore. They've got enough technology. They can produce energy. You know, they can keep half a million of us around to grow food or do whatever. But I think we're at a point now where they can see the light at the end of the tunnel. So I'm kind of agreeing with you in that I think that the desperation hour is at hand. And I also think that's why we're seeing so much infighting going on between, some of the elite families as we're moving forward, because the only thing left they have to jostle for is power, you know.
But I think we need to have an alternative. All right. Now, here's a quick solution. If everyone says that there is no solutions and the Illuminati are united, then they're not. And woe is me. Baloney. Here's a quick solution. America has too much debt. Everyone knows that, right? If we cut welfare and defense in half, and we easily cut defense in half, it's all crap. More than half of it's crap. If we cut defense and welfare in half, federal budget is balanced. Okay? Done. If we make corporations that are not paying taxes now pay taxes for 20 years, guess what? That in 20 years, you pay off the $17 trillion that we're in debt. Done! So all this crap that we can't balance a budget, we can't get the country on even keels, nonsense. I just showed you how we solved that problem right then and there. Then what we need to do is take all the unemployed people, like 11 million, have 2 years of national service where you can choose police corps, nursing corps, civilian conservation corps, or high-speed train corps. You have these people create a high-speed train network. Then I don't have to talk to you on Skype. I get on a high-speed train. I got Eva Green cuddling with me in the bed, and then we get to your place, and I'm on your radio show live.
Right.
Because I just hopped on a 300-mile-an-hour train.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that would totally revive the American economy. You can't tell all the great ideas that would come out if people could just get on a high-speed train and get to the other part of the country, how many business opportunities and whatever. But we do need to get our act together. We can't have people cranking out kids like we are. I think if I was President of the United States, I'd say, look, you can't have more than two kids. We can't make it illegal, but stop having so many kids. We've got only, 2 million people dying. We don't want any of those people dying. If we do what we want, which is have people drink carrot juice each day, which cures cancer, you know that? If everybody in the United States drank carrot juice, there would be no cancer in the country. Lemons and peas also cure cancer.
Right.
But, they want people to die. That's what people don't understand. They understand the Illuminati has a little bit of responsibility, and they're going, we are getting kind of crowded. But their solution is always F you. Basically, let's kill a bunch of people, okay? That's the Illuminati because they don't give a damn about you, right?
Wow.
But there is another alternative, and that would be to get ourselves living sensibly and not overproducing, and then, of course, conquering space. Another 2-year national service option would be to be a space corps, and that's when Americans and human beings are at their best, when they're colonizing.
Interesting. I think some of those options actually aren't that bad, to be honest. But I hope to have you back on the show at some point in the future, Mr. Sparks. We can talk about some of this in greater depth. But thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was it for the broadcast today. Hope you enjoyed Mr. Mike Sparks. Again, check out his website at jamesbondisforreal.com. And please tune back in tomorrow. Commander Dale Brown will be on the show.
Chris and Sri Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.